All right.
Sit courtside for all the legal news of the day on the Courtside Radio Show. Your host, Attorney Scott Weinberg, will guide you through the legal maze of our court system and the laws that affect you personally. And now, here's your host, Attorney Scott Weinberg.
Welcome to the show. Good morning out there. Beautiful, bright, and sunny morning. We're shining all over your rights. Everyone is talking about bankruptcy. I mean, everyone is talking about bankruptcy. What is it? How does it affect creditors' rights and us individually? We're going to talk to a bankruptcy expert and attorney, so we're going to get your questions ready so we can actually ask some good, intelligent questions of this attorney. Ariel Castro. Ariel Castro, sentenced to life plus 1,000 years. I don't even know how long that is. What did he say at a sentencing, and does anybody care that he got to speak? Edward Snowden. He might have leaked that everyone can see yours and my information on Google, but what does it mean to our privacy? We're going to talk to Professor Schindler later on in the show and discuss who can peek under the covers of our internet and why. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. Courtside Radio.
Stay tuned for your scot-free legal tip of the day, sponsored by Courtside Radio on 1130 WDFN, The Fan.
After Sergeant Matthew Kyle was injured in Iraq, his young wife Tracy faced the daunting task of getting their VA benefits.
There's a lot of red tape, there's a lot of confusion, there's a lot of forms to fill out.
For years, paralyzed veterans trained experts have helped injured veterans and their families. National Service Officer Bobby Hager explains.
We're able to fill out all of the forms and applications and ask for all of the benefits that veteran's entitled to.
To help, visit pva.org.
Hi, I'm Scott Weinberg, and here's my scot-free legal tip of the day. If you use medical marijuana, be sure you know all the ins and outs of the law, when and where, how to store it, and how to use it before you decide to get behind the wheel of a vehicle. The Michigan Supreme Court, in a controversial recent decision, People v. Kuhn, they recently state that when the government is charging a person with operating while under the influence statute, and that person has a valid medical marijuana certificate, the prosecutor has to prove more than simple use. The government has to prove that the driver was under the influence of the drug, not simply had it in his system. But make no mistake, the police will be performing field sobriety tests, you know, finger to nose, walk a straight line, that kind of thing, to show a person is basically influenced by the drug and then arrest them for drug driving. So tip of the day, know your rights before you get behind the wheel of a vehicle. I'm Attorney Scott Weinberg, and that's your scot-free legal tip of the day. All right, let me ask you a legal question. How many lawyers do you know? How many lawyers do you trust? When you get in trouble or don't know the answer to a legal question, who do you call? Well, now you have a network of lawyers you can call right now at 800-7100-LAW. Hi, I'm Scott Weinberg, host of Courtside Radio. Any legal question you have deserves an honest answer. A lawyer you can trust. Don't just settle for anything less. Whatever legal question, text the word ADVICE to 313131 or call 800-7100-LAW. If I can't answer the question, I'll make sure one of my lawyers will. Guaranteed. Text the word ADVICE to 313131 or call 800-7100-LAW. That number again is 800-7100-LAW or text ADVICE to 313131. Get the justice you deserve.
Let's rejoin the Courtside Radio Show with your host, Attorney Scott Weinberg.
Welcome back to the show. Well, they sentenced him. What people call one of the worst monsters that we can think of in recent times, at least, what he did to these three individuals. Kidnapper Ariel Castro shocked a Cleveland court by saying he's not a monster. He lived a normal life and that the sex they had and the three women he held captive for more than a decade was consensual. I mean, people went crazy all over the internet. They went nuts on the radio shows talking about this. Castro's statement came after one of his victims, the petite Michelle Knight, confronted him for the hell she endured in his house for 11 years. You know, we covered this a lot on the show. Of course, they did. And everywhere in the country, 11 years of captivity. And he says that the sex was consensual. Castro showed no reaction to the remarks by night. You know, that's a very typical thing, too, where people would actually be in that situation. They're caught. They're being sentenced. They've pled. They know it's all over, and they don't give the victim the satisfaction of looking them in the eye and basically getting what they're trying to say. As a person, he says, everything went wrong, but there was play. He was played by addiction to porn. You know, there's nothing worse. There is nothing worse than a family to sit in a courtroom and listen to the remarks by someone who has committed crimes and be able to say anything they want. It is one of the hardest things to do. I've seen it for years. It is one of the hardest things to do is to, as a family of a victim, let alone the victim themselves, to listen to the remarks of someone convicted of committing crimes against your family member. And that is one of the questions we wanted to ask today. Is it, should it be allowable to have the defendant say anything he wants for really as long as he wants without any ability for the judge basically to stop it? Is it cause too much trouble for that victim's family or the victim herself to be able to listen to his statements? And is it something that they should have the right to do? You call 248-848-1130 and let me know. Do you think they should have cut him off? Should they not even let him speak? Because obviously we know that in our ability to have our justice system work well, we allow defendants to basically say anything they want, to take the stand if they want, to not take the stand if they don't want to, and to make statements at that sentencing of whatever nature, whether it's lies or not. I didn't murder someone. I mean, they could say anything they want. And that's the question of the day. Do you feel that they should have not allowed him to speak? 248-848-1130. It is one of the processes of our justice system that people don't realize that our system is really put together not necessarily for the victims. There are victims' rights advocates and statutes, especially here in the state of Michigan, that codify the rights of victims of crimes, even get them money. We have obviously monies that are put aside every time that a defendant is convicted of a crime. Part of their fee that they pay is to the Victims' Rights Advocates Fund, this victim fund that can pay out monies to victims of certain kinds of crimes. And they had those rights. But I'm telling you, after doing this for 27 years in court, the rights of victims always are under the rights of the defendant. The rights of the defendant have always been upheld in our Constitution higher. You might not like hearing that, but that is the way it is. Victims' rights advocates have tried to change that so that they actually can be at sentencings and pleas and pretrials and arraignments and motions. But you know what? Many prosecutors' offices, they really don't follow that. They feel that their job is to get convictions, and especially if they don't have a victim that is on board to do exactly what they want to do, they don't necessarily bother with it. They don't. It's not right, but they don't necessarily bother with it. You want to join the conversation, at least ask that. 248-848-1130, and we're going to have you be the wicked, awesome caller of the day for Lady Jane's, one of the best haircut places around, and we know them, and they actually do a great job. I've been going to them for years. Now, quite frankly, I don't have a lot of hair left, but whatever hair I have, they do a wonderful job, and it's a great place to go and watch sports and TV while you're doing it. Wicked awesome Lady Jane's haircut here in Metro Detroit. When we come back, we're going to talk about bankruptcy. Now, it's what people are talking about, so we got to join the conversation. What is it? How is it involved? What is it going to do with creditors' rights? And what is it going to be for you specifically if you're involved in as a, quote, victim of this bankruptcy in Detroit? Stay tuned on Courtside Radio. We'll be right back.
Stay tuned for your scot-free legal tip of the day, sponsored by Courtside Radio on 1130 WDFN, The Fan.
When my family found out I was on drugs, they were devastated.
It was killing them, you know, it was killing them.
Tears your family up more than it does you.
My dad was frantic, and he looked at me and he said, "We're not gonna gamble with your life."
I wanted to have my family back, and that's when my mother found Narcanon.
If you or someone you love has a drug or alcohol problem, call Narcanon today at 1-800-468-6933 or visit us at www.stopaddiction.com.
Hi, I'm Scott Weinberg, and here's my scot-free legal tip of the day. If you're charged with domestic violence, know your rights before you go into court. Remember, most assault cases are he said, she said cases, relying on someone's word to go forward. There are many people charged with domestic violence that do need therapy and support in learning how to not lash out to solve their problems. But there are many people who are charged that don't deserve to be charged at all. For instance, someone trying to get an upper hand in a custody battle might make a false allegation against you. Know your rights before you go to court and don't plead to something that you may regret. There are first offender statutes that allow many people to get therapy they need and designed to teach instead of punish. I'm attorney Scott Weinberg, and that's your scot-free legal tip of the day.
Time for traffic.
All right, we have bad news if you're on the road. An overturned tractor trailer is causing major gridlock. Cleanup crews are trying to remove the wreckage, and traffic is backed up for nearly 12 miles. If you don't want to be stuck in your car all day, make sure you absolutely avoid route...
Please deposit 25 cents for the next 3 minutes.
Radio. You shouldn't have to pay for it. This message brought to you by America's 13,000 local radio stations who believe some things were just meant to be free.
Let's rejoin the Courtside Radio Show with your host, attorney Scott Weinberg.
Welcome back to the show. You know, we're going to talk first about, instead of bankruptcy, we're going to talk about Snowden because, you know, we get calls all the time and I get asked during the week, especially when I'm in court, talking about people's rights to privacy. It is unbelievable how much information we allow ourselves to disclose to the public, to put out into the domain of the public, and then we're shocked when somehow people know what's going on in our private lives. And, you know, you have to separate Edward Snowden, this leaker. Some people would say this traitor, but we know you can't be a traitor, right? As we know from the show, without having actually a declared war. But at least someone who's now being charged with espionage and hiding a different country, what is the view? How do you separate what he was doing from what is actually harmful? I mean, how do we separate that? How do we know what should be kept private? What should be kept in a private domain or not leaked out to the public, including our private information, not even just government secrets, our own private information? How do you separate that from what is allowable in this public domain? And we're joined here by Cooley Professor, our favorite light of reason for the Constitution, Professor Schindler. Welcome back to the show.
Well, I say I've been promoted to your favorite light of reason. I'm honored.
I like that. That's your new heading, light of reason, Professor Schindler.
I'm truly honored. Thank you,
Professor. So I was literally just in court the other day, and there was a case that was going on about, quite frankly, it was a stalking case, and there was an issue of whether or not they could allow the Facebook notations and the Facebook pages of this one individual into court. And without getting into the specifics of the criminal procedure of it, it always brings up to light on how much our personal information is stuck out there in the public. And we do it. And yet we hear this whole thing with what happened with Snowden, with the NSA, and we think, well, those are state secrets, so it's okay that they keep that quiet. How do we separate that in a constitutional sense?
Well, I think you've touched upon the important distinction here, that there's a difference between private individual facts, things that we do that we might want to keep personal, things we want to keep private, versus, as you put it, state secrets. And although we don't really have a state secret statute, the espionage statute has been interpreted as protecting what, you know, we commonly call state secrets. And the difference in my mind is this. We join together in a community and we create a government. The government, as we've long recognized, and I don't think many people other than the complete anarchists would disagree with this, that sometimes government has to operate in privacy or secrecy for the benefit of the whole, for the benefit of everybody who has joined our political community. And so, for example, we talk about things like war secrets. There's a famous case called Near versus Minnesota, where the court said, look, there are certain things that the government must have the ability to remain confidential because of the injury they could cause to us as a body politic, as a group of people. And what they cited, for example, this was a 1919 case, was the shipping times for boats. The fear being that if we can't keep the shipping times for boats secret, that information could get to our enemy and they could plant U-boats outside of our harbors.
Right, but keeping with that, so, I mean, those kind of things, of course, you know, a citizen, just a person listening to that would say, well, of course, we don't want our enemies to know when we have shipping. That was a long time ago, that case. But we don't want to know when they can. We want to know when they can attack us. We don't want to announce to them, especially when we're in war, when we're taking certain actions.
Well, but wait. Let's bring this into the 21st century. Justice Scalia talks about a case a few years ago where the government had a secret program that allowed it to listen in on cell phone calls. They used satellites, and they were able to target cell phone conversations, and they were generally doing this overseas with known terrorists. During the course of a criminal trial, information was released on the defendant, and the defendant's counsel stood up and said, well, how did you get that information? And the witness, an FBI agent, said, well, that's a state secret. Judge made him tell, and you know what immediately happened? Cell phones around the world being used by terrorists were shut down. And so my suggestion here is when you look at that same principle, the principle that we shouldn't disclose to our enemies things that could harm us in a quote-unquote war, the same principle applies in 2013 to some of the intelligence operations that we have going. We don't want al-Qaeda to know that we can listen in on their phone calls, and yet that information has been leaked, and as a result, we've lost a very important intelligence tool.
Yeah, but
the principle remains good.
But I want to focus on that, because when you say, of course, when you have something that is done by the government to protect the interest of its citizens, it's, of course, giving them the freedom to do that and to make the choice of that. And that is what bothers me. That is the issue. It's not to keep a state secret when we want to be able to have or even have this intrusion on our individual rights so that the government can find an al-Qaeda operative, that they can actually discover someone who's planning a terrorist attack. But don't we just get lumped into that and then our rights are violated because they don't really know who they're listening to?
Well, the problem is always the devil is in the details. To use the analogy, leaking the time that your yacht is leaving might not be a big deal, but leaking the time that the troop ship is leaving is a big deal. And so the question becomes, it's a variation on who gets to make the decision, and are the decision makers making the correct decisions? Because I think, other than my anarchist out there, the fundamental principle that there are certain things that government need to remain secret, I think is a sound principle. Most people would agree with that. The debate here is really about what are the tools and what are the protections the government has put into place to ensure that that decision is made wisely. And when I say wisely, in a fashion that balances the government's need to keep certain things secret with the individual's right to privacy. That obviously is an incredibly difficult decision, but if not government, who's to make that decision? And Scott, if I can just make one point here on this. One of the big issues on this whole NSA wiretapping and metadata collection, people feel it invades their privacy. Well, in our system of government, the president has signed off on this program, Congress has signed off on this program, and according to the Patriot Act, the judiciary has a check to make sure that the program is not abused. In our system of government, what more can we ask? We can disagree with the decisions that these three entities have made, but it's not, if it works the way it's supposed to, all three, there's a check and balance in place because all three of our governmental entities, judiciary, legislative, and executive, have signed off. No system is perfect, but I'm hard-pressed to come up with a better system to make those very hard kind of decisions.
Well, it is true that we actually did approve or have our representative
body approve it. But, you know, we can all just say the same thing about the Patriot Act, too. I mean, do we feel that that's gone afar since the mid-2000s and we want to scale back their powers?
I will give Snowden this much. When we talked before on this, Scott, several weeks ago, I'm not a big fan of Snowden, but I will give him his due. The contrary argument, and there is something to it, that the ultimate check on the three branches of government are the decisions of the people, people acting in their capacity as voters and things of that nature. If the people don't have the information, they can't make wise choices as to who they elect. And so the real flaw in my argument, and I recognize it's a flaw, is without understanding what government's up to, so what? Congress approved it. So what? We didn't know that, and we elected congressmen that we may strongly disagree with. We just don't know we disagree with them because we don't know what they're up to. And so the flaw, of course, in the argument is that without the leakage of this sort of information, we're not, as voters, in a good position to make wise decisions on who to vote for.
We're talking to Professor Devin Schindler here from Cooley Law School. I want to go back to what we talked about before. We get back to our individual social media disclosures. Are those protected once we put, I get this all the time, and it's something I wanted to get your opinion on. Are they protected when we put out on Twitter or on Facebook or on any social media site some personal information? Do we have any right to privacy on it, or have we given it up once we put it out into the internet?
As a constitutional matter, as opposed to a statutory matter, government can always pass statutes to increase the level of protection that kind of information enjoys. But as a constitutional matter, we look to the Fourth Amendment and the idea of a reasonable expectation of privacy. If I close my doors, close my drapes, lock my door, and read a pornography magazine, for example, the court's going to say, look, you have a reasonable expectation of privacy. You've locked your doors, you've barred your windows, nobody can look in. You created a private area that has private information that you are allowed to keep private, even from the government, absent reasonable suspicion or probable cause. Once you put something out of the internet in 2013, unless you've been living under a rock, you should know that that information is going to be accessible and potentially accessible by people that you don't want to see it. And so given current technology, the courts have generally ruled that, hey, you put it on the internet, you have waived your expectation of privacy because you knew or should have known that that information is going to be available for people to review. Now, there are statutes out there that give some increased protection on email and things of that nature, and even the Patriot Act requires some level of showing of reasonable suspicion in order to access emails and whatnot. But as a general constitutional matter, what I tell my folks is, yeah, you've got some arguments if it's, encrypted email, but recognize that no system is perfect, and if you put it out there, you are risking either the government or, perhaps even worse, hackers, foreign governments, whatever the case may be, accessing that information.
You know, I've had, we recently had a case where we tried to subpoena these records from Facebook, and they denied the subpoena. And now we have to figure out how we're going to get Facebook to comply with the subpoena to get this guy's individual Facebook record. And go ahead.
I'm sorry. It's interesting because years ago, before I became a law professor, I had a very similar case. I was on the other side of it. I won't mention the client. But a number of internet providers and the like have taken the position that they are allowed to defend your right of privacy and your right of anonymous speech. You do have a constitutional right when you speak to remain anonymous. Think about the founding. Even the Federalist Papers were issued anonymously. They were published, but we didn't know who the authors were until, Jay and Madison and Hamilton came along and said, yep, it's us. But the notion of private speech or anonymous speech is well encased in our history and tradition. And so if I post something on Facebook and I do it anonymously, or I post a post that criticizes the president, and I use a made up name, I do enjoy a certain level of right, constitutional right, to remain anonymous. And what a number of providers, including my client in the situation I'm mentioning, take the position that they are allowed to refuse subpoenas that seek the identity of people that are posting anonymously on their site, because those individuals do share a fundamental right to post anonymously. So there are principled internet providers out there, for a variety of good reasons and largely business reasons, really, have said, we are going to defend the privacy rights of our posters. But at the end of the day, if you show a compelling enough interest, that presumption of anonymity or protection can be overcome. And more importantly, with the FISA court and the secret FISA court, the government can get into that material, assuming it's on their metadata list, on essentially a showing of reasonable suspicion.
Well, and that's what they did with Google and with Verizon, right?
Yep, exactly.
And we're talking here with Professor Devin Schindler from Cooley Law School, and we appreciate that, always coming here. And our new light of reason, we like that term. So we'll have you back on the show next time. We always have this every other week, some constitutional issue, and we appreciate you coming in and enlightening us, Professor. Thank you very much.
Always a pleasure. You have a good day.
We're Courtside Radio. Be right back.
Stay tuned for your scot-free legal tip of the day, sponsored by Courtside Radio on 1130 WDFN, The Fan.
After Sergeant Matthew Kyle was injured in Iraq, his young wife Tracy faced the daunting task of getting their VA benefits.
There's a lot of red tape, there's a lot of confusion, there's a lot of forms to fill out.
For years, paralyzed veterans trained experts have helped injured veterans and their families. National Service Officer Bobby Hager explains.
We're able to fill out all of the forms and applications and ask for all of the benefits that that veteran's entitled to.
To help, visit pva.org.
Hi, I'm attorney Scott Weinberg, and here's your scot-free legal tip of the day. Drunk driving. It's politically incorrect. It's killing people. And yet, it still happens here in the state of Michigan every single day. Why do people get behind the wheel of a vehicle after they've had too much to drink? Should we have breathalyzers in every bar before we leave? Should every car be fitted with a breathalyzer called an interlock device so that we have to blow into it before we start up the vehicle? Back in 2010, Michigan passed a law called Super Drunk Driving, which says that if you have 0.17 blood to alcohol content in your system, when you're operating a vehicle, you will lose your license and only get it back with these interlock breath devices in your car for the better part of a year. So,